Hey, Bob. My
doesn't sound comfortable in our voice or in video.
And so, without further ado,
is there when I need?
I'm your host, Alex Ansari. Glad to be back. It's 2006. I know there were some programs you may have missed over the past few weeks. Cable access has been closed. I assure you, the show has not been canceled. Tonight is a special program. I was able to track down Scott Stevens. Scott Stevens is he's an important guest. What he looks at is weather modification, weather manipulation. He's been doing this for a number of years. As you'll hear from him himself in just a few minutes, he started out as a meteorologist over in Idaho. And through examining the weather, through giving the weather reports, he started to do his own research. Weaponizing weather, using weather to do certain things that humans would like it to do. You know, there's a lot of amazing technological breakthroughs that the Pentagon is working with right now in controlling or owning the weather. So with that, we'll let Scott explain some of his research for himself. And with that, we will bring him through and get right to the program right here on Outside the Box. Hey,
hi,
Scott.
Alex. Hey, glad to be here this evening with you.
So tell us a little bit about how you got started doing what you do.
It started back in the late 90s when forecasting the weather. Mm-hmm. Our accuracy, especially during the winter months in dealing with the Pacific storms coming in, from the ocean then into the western U.S., they were just not behaving as they were modeled to do. And as a meteorologist and as a forecaster, those models are crucial in building a forecast. They generate how much moisture will come from a storm, the winds and the temperatures. So basically they simulate the atmosphere to some point in the future. And the farther we get out in the future from the current time, the less accurate they become. But there was storm after storm that just simply were not behaving as modeled. And that kind of got me a little curious, or at least a red flag went up that something wasn't right. And then I was researching dark energy, or basically the missing mass that's in the universe, and had come across the website of a lieutenant colonel. His name was Thomas Bearden, and his website was chenier.org, chenier.org. And one of the sidebars on Colonel Bearden's website was about Soviet weather engineering. And that immediately caught my attention. And so as I did research into his assertions and some of the intelligence that he came across in the 60s, 70s, and 80s when he was working for the government, he laid out a plan whereby back in the 1940s, Joseph Stalin, when he got wind of our Manhattan Project, our nuclear weapons project, Joseph Stalin, the Soviet dictator, told his scientists and his military to match the Americans bomb for bomb.
Mm-hmm.
But then something more important, he said, get me something, get me some weapon that the Americans don't have. And that began their research into what they term energetics, which is the use of electromagnetic waves or simply EM energy as a weapon. And that was the genesis of what they eventually termed the geophysical weapon, which is capable, as Defense Secretary Cohen stated in 1997, of setting off earthquakes, volcanic activity, and altering our climate.
Scott, how much of some of this stuff that you're talking about, how much of it relates to the modern Star Wars program?
You know, that's where a lot of the funding for our side of the catch-up game probably came from. Because I would guess that much of our intelligence was just simply blind to this happening through the 60s and 70s. When the Soviets brought their tools online in 1963, it probably was not until the mid-1970s when we had an inkling that something was seriously amiss. And Colonel Bearden had one of his staff brief President Reagan in 1985. So we know the military may have been aware of what was going on, but the executive branch of government did not until 1985, and this was a full 22 years after deployment. And this was now 21 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been quite some span of time where the Soviets had an undeniable head start. And this technology wasn't dragged completely through the military. It was kept at the KGB level, as all secret weapons are. And the weather engineering did not begin on a wide-scale basis until Bicentennial Weekend, 1976.
Mm-hmm.
And we got wind of that being turned on when the shortwave radio, the ham operators, began to hear a pulsing in the 3 to 3 megahertz range of the shortwave radio. And it became known as the woodpecker grid. And it's just this constant chirping over numerous frequencies at four various lengths of time. Say it could be chirping for 3 seconds, it's off for 7, then it runs for 30 seconds, then it's off for 10, and then it runs again. And it's just these antennas as they're as they pulse the energy into the earth, change their direction or change their strength and where they're pointing and start up again. And it's that was the beginning of the change of this planet's weather, was 30 years ago this coming July. So since that point in time, it's unlikely that this planet has enjoyed normal weather or natural weather. And since that point in time, we've seen changes in the shapes of clouds, changes in the behavior of storms, of unnatural droughts.
You're talking
about the El Niños and the La Niñas began in earnest at that point in time.
Now you're talking about the phenomenon known as chemtrails then, aren't you?
Well, the chemtrails, after all the government figured out that we were subject to this weather, this geophysical engineering, they needed to determine a way to figure out what was going on and what extent it was having, and how extensive this action was in our atmosphere. And probably through the 80s and early 90s, they thought, we've got to put tracers or markers somewhere in the atmosphere, like a doctor would put dye in your body and then trace to see where it flows. And that's ultimately the reason for the chemtrails, was to put markers in the sky to see where the atmosphere at certain levels was moving in relationship to where we thought it was going. And so whereas the National Weather Service and mainstream science, we release balloons twice a day, radio songs.
There are a number of people watching this program right now that believe that chemtrails are natural.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as strange as it is, there are people watching the program right now think it's all normal, and that is just the result of a contrail or a commercial airline. What would you say to those people as far as where to get some accurate information on this chemtrail phenomenon?
Well, certainly there are those contrails up there. That is a given with the extent of commercial traffic that we've got across this country and North America. But there is two different fleets of aircraft working the skies.
Mm-hmm.
And there are those aircraft that are maintained by the commercial and the cargo industries. And these planes are very efficient. And they typically don't leave contrails that last for more than a few seconds. There are atmospheric conditions when they do make persistent contrails. But the difference is the flight patterns of these military craft. and that they have certain targets or certain atmospheric phenomena which are targets of them. And it honestly, Alex, it takes time to sit and just watch and figure out which ones are which. And if you know that there are the two fleets out there, you'll look at the sky differently. But take 2 hours a week and just get your lawn chair out there and start watching the skies. And within 2 or 3 months, you'll have a much firmer understanding of what's going on in the skies.
Yeah, it was. There was one day during the summer when I was living up in northeast Portland, and I had, up until that point, thought that it was possible that a lot of this chemtrail hysteria from so-called conspiracy theorists may be just a conspiracy, till one day I walked out of my house and saw a clear, I mean, it was a clear sky earlier that day in the morning. And I came out, and then I saw one very solid, you know, line that was puffed out that was fairly linear. And then as I went back inside my house, did some more work and whatever else I was doing inside, I came back out 2 hours later, and it was completely spread out evenly throughout the entire sky.
And that was similar to my experience, where I honestly did not want to get into the chemtrail issue at all.
Right.
It just, you know, as a weatherman, there are conditions in the atmosphere where the contrails are persistent. That's a given. And that's what these people were seeing. And I wasn't willing to budge from that point of view. Until an August afternoon, August of 04, in the front yard talking with a neighbor, and there's a 747 lumbering at probably 21, 22,000 feet low across the city. And it was at a vector that just was not one of the passenger plane's routes, and all four engines looked like they were simply flaming out, and the plane was going to go down beyond the hills. And that was my conversion moment, that plane was leaving this chemical trail in the sky to measure what the atmosphere was doing and to find boundaries of this scalar interference within the sky. And so I've set up four cameras around the house matching the cardinal points of the compass, and it becomes very easy to see, because of the flight patterns, which planes are commercial and which ones are chemtrails. And they focus on certain atmospheric bursts and certain cirrus clouds and certain openings that they'll go back and remark, and it's a very, very complex and very, very important program for this country as far as weather modification is concerned. And until we stop the scalar of the electromagnetic war, these chemtrails are not going to go away. We're going to have to put up with them.
One last question on the chemtrail issue before we move on is, do you believe the effects of these chemtrails are limited to weather modification? In other words, do you believe that they are also serving a more diabolical purpose, if you will, to reduce the population of planet Earth through some sort of plague that could be enclosed, disguised within these trails?
I think we can. There's going to be some intended side effects and unintended side effects from this very extensive operation across, honestly, virtually every continent now. There is the environmental fallout of these heavier metals, the barium and aluminum, that are raining down on our pristine lands. And there will be ecological side effects. There will be human and animal health side effects from these metals. That is simply a given. It's a side effect of the war that we're fighting. There's also the climatological side effect, which is the increase in high clouds that we're dealing with. And that is resulting in an acceleration of the global warming issue. So you add a layer of high clouds, and since these planes are flown 24/7, 365, and then 3 days after 9/11, they did not fly, we were able to enjoy some blue skies and then see the diurnal range of the temperature spike by 3 degrees Fahrenheit. It was just a wider range, with the nights a little bit cooler and the days a touch bit warmer. But there are side effects from these trails, whether it is one of the intended consequences of population reduction or health issues, I can't say. But we know it is having an effect, and many people do have allergic and primarily sinus and upper respiratory issues after days of heavy activity.
Yeah, people
are
a lot.
One of the goals, I don't know.
Yeah, even with technology and drugs and medication, people are sicker than they used to be. Now, Scott, you really came out on the scene slightly before Hurricane Katrina. You were on Ground Zero, I think about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there was somebody who came here to Cable Access as my guest, and my guest on Matt as Hell TV, also with Courtney Scott and Clyde Lewis. And his name is Anthony J. Hilder. He made a film called Illuminati.
Right.
And Anthony J. Hilder came on my program and Matt as Hell TV to say that while Bush was on vacation, this is during the time of August, this was actually specifically August 13th, 2005, when he made this prediction, that there would be another state-sponsored terrorist attack upon the American people to boost the failing approval rating of George W. Bush. And he was on vacation last time that 9/11 happened on September 11, 2001. He was just coming off vacation. Right. So what I'm getting at is, what really opened your eyes with Hurricane Katrina? Because after that, you really came on the scene. You were on Coast to Coast, and you were on A&E, which we'll play a clip of later, talking about this weather modification concept.
What it's interesting, because that wasn't intentional. I had already had the website up. I'd already done numerous interviews. It was basically, the man has become a pretty good friend of mine, Richard Heaney, and his website is The Science Detective. His curiosity is how to influence the strength of rotating storms. And one of his discoveries is that every rotating storm, be it a dust devil or a hurricane, creates a magnetic field, an electrical field. And these fields are strengthened or weakened by the amount of particulate matter at the base of the cyclone, whether it's the dust devil, it's the dust and the pH of the soils, or it's the pH of the salt water at the base of a hurricane. And so there's an electrical field generated by these rotating storms. And I was on Richard's show about the time of Katrina. And he had a friend who was a reporter for the Flash Wire Service. And so it was that reporter who wrote up a bit for Richard's show and a little bit of quid pro quo that the story then broke. And so it just happened to be that it all happened about the time of Katrina and the Rita incidences, which is good, because that has certainly given us a leg up, and I've had a lot of emails, people who first became aware of me and this issue right about the time of the hurricanes. And then as they have watched the skies and watched the contrails and watched the shapes of the clouds and just the odd behavior of the weather over the last several months, they have become, well, let's just say, a little more in the way of believers. And so, Katrina was kind of the watershed moment for this movement. But it's not the end. I mean, we dealt with Zeta all the way up through the end of the year. And Alex, I would bet that as we get to May of next year, maybe even as soon as late April, we'll start with the next tropical storm season. It'll start very early. And this coming year, instead of pounding the Gulf Coast or Florida, it'll move Florida early in the season and then move up towards the Mid-Atlantic and New England.
I agree. Lately, especially during the holidays, I was just observing the amount of wind speed that has been going through the Portland, Oregon area.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been amazing. It has been very, very fast. We saw 30-mile-an-hour winds, 40-mile-an-hour winds, and that's not something that we usually experience to that extent. Here's my question to you. With the change in weather, with typically colder parts of the world in winter becoming warmer, and we're seeing warmer parts of the earth like California getting, say, snow during July. And I'm wondering, is that the result of man, or do you see that also in conjunction with the earth's possible next cycle or a switching or a change of the magnetic poles?
I think the best likening we can make to that is a person who is sick, and you get through the heat, you get the sweats, and you get the chills at the same time. And that's kind of what this planet is going through as it does go through an adjustment, be it magnetic, be it through solar energy, be it with ocean circulation. She's stressed. This planet is grossly stressed right now. But I think to answer your question directly, it's more likely the influence of man than it is the planet. But at some point, she's going to stand up and say, enough, enough. I need to breathe on my own. And she'll destroy the machinery with quakes, and she'll take her atmosphere back. And I don't know when that's going to happen.
Right.
But if we don't use this machinery for the betterment of all, that will happen much sooner than later.
If a viewer of this program wanted to get started looking at some very accurate, non-conspiratorial information that is true, that can be proven scientifically on Hurricane Katrina being created by man, where would you recommend what part of weather modification they begin to look at?
Oh, goodness. I don't know if there is a source out there like that. I would start at the National Hurricane Center, the NHC, and just begin to look through their archives and documents. And these guys know what's going on. They're fully aware of the situation that this planet's in and the situation this country finds itself in, and they will often leave clues within their writings. It's not blatant, but you can read between the lines. Their feelings and their comments and their observations are there, and that's probably the best way to start. And you could begin to read into some of their discussions, but the NAC without question is the best place to go. For the hurricane data, and then just Google, and you let your power of discernment kind of figure out what is crap and what isn't. You know, that's honestly all we have to go on is just kind of your own internal compass about what's right and what isn't. And sometimes something that looks good one day, you'll come back a month later, and after having researched and having had that information, you know, percolate within you, you just go, nah, that isn't right. You know, and that's okay. That's just part of this this voyage of discovery that we're all set upon. But we have to look at the skies with a little bit of a jaded eye anymore. Katrina and Rita were there, and without question, we have assets that can strengthen those storms. And my firm belief is that the feds did it as a federal grab for power. In the notes that Karl Rove wrote and that the governor of Louisiana released, they wanted martial law declared across Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. And those three governors resisted with all their might and were grateful they did. But Karl Rove pushed and pushed for martial law. And that's something that they wanted.
Scott,
they wanted to create the chaos, and so they held back the National Guard and hoped that New Orleans would descend into chaos so they could declare martial law, that there would be no resistance from local law enforcement and the local politicians when the feds marched in, and they would have never gotten local control back. So that's one thing that, despite any other disasters we've got coming up in this country this winter or this coming summer, is we've got to be on the lookout for the feds grabbing power. That's our greatest risk in the coming weeks, months, and years ahead, especially with this administration.
On Mattis Hell TV, you mentioned social change. Is that what you mean by that?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You also had mentioned something I had heard from many other people, which is a real document. It's actually very long, known as Agenda 21.
Mm-hmm. Population reduction,
right,
as one of their bullet points.
Why?
You know, this was not a terribly effective way to get population, but what it does is set up unsanitary conditions along a long stretch of the Gulf that basically grinds the ecology of the region into the ground and then restarts up again. But more importantly, it is an infection of poverty that this nation, which is so deeply in debt, will struggle to overcome. Mm-hmm. We have cities along the Gulf Coast, and Atlanta being one of the primary ones where these refugees have settled, which are dealing with panhandling laws, where people are living in their cars. There are literally tens of thousands of people that have been displaced, and they're not qualified or can't get into a FEMA trailer park, a FEMAville. So this is going to be tough. They keep saying the economy is strong, that unemployment is 4.9%, but when you dig through those numbers a little bit closer, unemployment is honestly just south of 10, or just a little bit below 10%. And it's going to be the poverty that eventually overtakes that area. But that's the ultimate reason for these disasters, and one of the reasons why the Kashmir region of Pakistan, that quake was very likely a man-made affair as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was to weaken, quote-unquote, the enemy. So
one of the things
Tom Bearden calls this episode of these scalar wars is called Bleeding the Dragon, where basically we were weakened by many, many small cuts, and it takes our capital, it takes our resources, it takes our brightest men, and it takes resources that would have been best invested in future production or in debt reduction. And it's going to be, we've got challenging times coming up ahead of us.
One last question.
Sure.
Where do you see America in 10 years?
That is entirely up to the people. Entirely up to the people. They can roll over and just take what D.C. wants to give them. And if they do that, then they're assuring themselves several generations of servitude and loss of our sovereignty and our liberties and our freedom. If we are bold enough, if we are brave enough, if we are courageous enough, then we can take personal responsibility for our individual lives, quit being victims, and stand up and take back our destiny. Our future is in our own hands, if people would realize that. And it should not be in our representatives' hands, our congressmen, our senators, and our mayors. Those people have demonstrated over the last 200 years that they're not capable of taking us in a direction where humanity needs to go. They've driven this planet literally to the edge of collapse. And there's a way to transcend the chaos that will ultimately come through. We're going to have to go through a period of chaos coming up. But we need to be planning for another paradigm of civilization on the other side. Whether that's in 10 years or whether that's in 25 years, I don't know. But we need to begin to plan for a sustainable economy, sustainable civilization, rather than something that is entirely growth-driven. Sustainability and personal responsibility will be the only things that we can build another civilization around, because this one is just about up. Just about up. And it's up to the individual people, Alex. Everybody will have to make those decisions of where they want to be and what they want to be doing in 10 years. If what you're doing today is enough for you, then you'll probably be left behind. But if life leaves you a little empty right now, then we need to be talking about how we want to be living, what we can accomplish and do in 10 or 15 or 20 years.
All right. I absolutely agree. We are against so much, and I'm going to get into some of that later on the program. You're having some website changes right now, so you're going to have a new website up in a little bit?
We're reworking the website, working on a database system rather than HTML, and swapping servers out this week, so there's been some time where it hasn't been available, but we hope to get that rectified by probably the 14th or 15th.
Mm. Well, Scott, I'd like to thank you for being on Outside the Box. We will stay in touch. What you are saying, I believe, is very important, and I have got a lot of very good feedback when I announced that you were going to be on the show and you were going to be on Matt as Hell TV. So you are a popular guy right now, and keep doing what you're doing.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure.
All right.
Give me a call anytime.
I will. All right.
Alrighty.
I'll talk to you then.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. Yeah, it's pretty intense. A lot of weather modification, the science, a lot of the audience has called in and asked about HARP and things like that. Another good researcher, maybe I'll have him on at some point, is Nick Begich, earthpulse.com. Now, just about any time you open up the paper and you're willing to go to the technology section, whether it be CNN or MSNBC, since Hurricane Katrina, they have been openly announcing that, yes, the Pentagon does indeed own the weather. Now, MSNBC reported that they are beaming weapons from space down to Earth. They're ready to go. They are ready to begin the process of using them in war. In this particular article, it says that there's a new breed of weaponry fast approaching, and at the speed of light, no less. They are labeled directed energy weapons, and they may well signal a revolution in military hardware, perhaps more so than the atomic bomb. The dangerous thing about this particular article is every single time you manipulate weather, this much I do understand, you affect the environment. You affect weather later on. So once man starts to play God, there are some consequences that we have to pay. Unusual weather perhaps? A rainstorm perhaps? Perhaps a hurricane taking away your home? I think if we learned one thing from Hurricane Katrina, it could have been this. That we as Americans need to be more self-sufficient and responsible for taking care of our families, our own lives, our children perhaps. Relying upon the government in the future is not a reality. It's not even a fantasy. It doesn't exist. I think this is the time where people need to start researching, examining what would happen if at one point in their life they had to leave their home.
We're going to show this next clip. This was produced through A&E. It's a few minutes. It features Scott Stevens, the conspiracy theorist, as they try to debunk him, explain more elaborately on this technology that the government owns. When we come back, we will get into some of the articles that maybe you weren't aware of over the past few weeks since we've been out. In the meantime, stick around, and we will also get to your phone calls in about 10 minutes. Until then, stay tuned.
Theorists have been hard at work coming up with plots and counterplots to account for all the disasters. One of the most popular, especially in the wake of Hurricane Katrina, has to do with something called weather warfare. That is, some group, maybe a government, terrorists, or even a mad genius, is controlling the weather for their own purposes.
There's got to be a simple explanation for why the weather is as bizarre as it is, and this is the only thing that honestly makes sense.
Scott Stevens gained notoriety after Hurricane Katrina when he suggested the powerful storm was indeed the work of man. Stevens has more than a passing interest in the weather. He spent 9 years as the weatherman for a station in Pocatello, Iowa.
Carolinas with a big eye of Ophelia just kind of churning off the coast. Still a big...
His interest in weather control was sparked when he read some stories about anomalies in cloud patterns that were supposedly caused by an electromagnetic grid in the sky, a grid that could be manipulated by man.
Instead of having the rounded clouds like one would expect in a fluid or gas environment, because the clouds are conforming to this electrical grid, we're seeing the square clouds. Now, they're still kind of ratty on the edges, but the holes are lined up. Very, very horizontal and vertical in nature.
When Stevens began looking at the sky and seeing what he considered irregularities in cloud patterns, he began fearing the worst, total weather control.
I got sick to the stomach because I realized the implications of what this meant. The weather had been stolen from us, and we didn't know it.
And Stevens, like many others, believes man is responsible for the devastating Hurricane Katrina.
Katrina displayed some anomalies within the cloud structure. There were points, there were straight lines, there were angulars, there was simply geometry that should not have been there in a swirling type of storm.
Stevens suggested that the Yakuza, the Japanese mafia, may have caused the powerful storm.
The Yakuza came across this technology from the KGB. When the KGB and the Soviet Union went bankrupt in 1989, the KGB, or at least a department therein, shopped this technology around, and the Yakuza paid the KGB for access to this scalar technology. If it is indeed the Yakuza, then it's likely retaliation for how we ended World War II with the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, that it would be a revenge kind of thing. Whether that's how it played out or not, I don't know.
Since, as Stevens says, this technology doesn't leave fingerprints, he also thinks any number of culprits could have manufactured Katrina.
Whether it's the Yakuza, the Russians, the Chinese, the India, or the states itself, all of it's a possibility.
While weather warfare theories may sound like the plot of a James Bond movie, to some, they're as obvious as a summer thunderstorm. In fact, Scott Stevens is so convinced of the danger of weather manipulation, he quit his job to follow it full time.
And once the people see what's happening in the skies and all of these very unusual geophysical events, you have to question whether there isn't some hand of man behind their origination. You have to question.
2006, it's no longer 2004, no longer 2005. Here we are, still again documenting the police state control grid. Recording what is happening with the war on you, the war on me, as it goes down. And I'm very displeased with the fact that my estimation is we are already in the New World Order, and there is not much we can do about it unless we start to mobilize and get that unity that we've lost for so long. I took a look at some of the news that's been rocking the nation's headlines. The Surveillance Society, the hearings of the Supreme Court nominee, we live in a staged society. We live in a dark society. Now, there's good things happening right now, and there are bad things. But we do need to be aware of how many admissions there are of the mainstream of this so-called THX 1138 reality that I've been talking about for some time. For example, article number one, we talked about microchips, we talked about RFID. Now it's expanding its power and grasp. CNN.com. Computer chips get under skin of enthusiasts. With a wave of a hand, a 29-year-old entrepreneur based in Vancouver, Canada, opens his front door. With another, he logs onto his computer. Tiny radio frequency identification chips inserted into his hand made it all possible. He says, quote, "I just don't want to be without access to the things that I need to get access to. In the worst case scenario, if I'm in the alley naked, I want to still be able to get into my house." Okay? And RFID is for me, end quote. They go on to list a number of other case studies in the New York area where more young people are adopting the new trendy approach to implantable microchips. Keyword here, folks, is trendy, popular, suave, whatever you want to call it. Some of you will recall a few years ago, the Barcelona nightclub in Spain announced that it would open up the microchip implant VIP line. And what that is you don't have to wait in line and go through the bouncer and wait forever to show your ID. You can scan your hand or your, this is the other spot where they put the implantable microchip, and get right in automatically. And it's not just limited to microchips, but in this next, in article number two, also documents the other part of biometric police state tactics, and that's the huge rise in juvenile DNA samples kept by the police. Okay? At a Home Affairs, the DNA from 750,000 juveniles has been added to the national database over the past 10 years, the government has revealed. Nearly a third of the samples have been included over the past 2 years since police were given power to take DNA from under 18s for the first time without the permission of the parents or guardians. They're also projecting that in the next 2 years, that number is going to rise by 7%. Now, as far as the surveillance society invading the schools, we talked last time in episode number 34 on the 22nd of December with Cindy Champion and her son who found the camera in the bathroom. Well, in article number 3, another school district is adding 44 cameras in their jurisdiction. This is out of the Detroit News. 4 dozen security cameras will be installed at the high school and the middle school in this area as early as next fall in a move some say will provide better security, but others fear infringes on privacy rights. The 48 cameras will be hardwired to the adjacent schools using existing fiber optic lines and will feed to a server that police will be able to access through the internet. Quote, "People tend not to do things when they know the cameras are present," said the captain of the police department. And we hear this many, many times. If you have nothing to fear, then you have nothing to hide. Those of you that have noticed in London, in the United States, if you say the word bomb, if you say the word terror, if you act suspicious, you can be shot immediately. But even USA Today in article number 4 is promoting that concept as well. Suspects' body language can blow their cover. So in the surveillance society, in the police state, everyone's a suspect. The article reads, Carl Macchiaro noticed that in the instant he watched a tape of 3 9/11 hijackers go through security at Dulles International Airport, he noticed something. Not one of the men looked at security guards. Quote, "They all looked down and had their heads down. Avoiding eye contact with authorities is the kind of behavior that could indicate someone may be planning a terrorist attack," says Macchiaro, a Transportation Security Administration program analyst. I'm going to go ahead and read you that last line one more time, in case you didn't catch the first time. Avoiding eye contact with authorities is the kind of behavior that could indicate someone may be planning a terrorist attack. One more time. Another eye contact with authorities. Avoiding eye contact means you're a terrorist. Avoiding eye contact means you're a terrorist. Avoiding eye contact means you're a terrorist. I have to drum this into the American psyche. We're moving into a new relationship with the police. At one time, they were our friends. Now they are the servants of the empire. And in the future, they will not be defending our lives, but defending the infrastructure, the wealth that the elite own, as the fight for natural resources goes on. What is happening with the government right now is sick. Article number 5 is going to blow your mind. Bush advisor says president has legal power to torture children. If you go to my link on alexansery.blogspot, within this article, there is a link to the audio transcript. John Yeo publicly argued there is no... It's John Yeo, not John Woo. John Yeo publicly argued there is no law that could prevent the president from ordering the torture of a child of a suspect in custody, including crushing the child's testicles. AlexAnsery.blogspot.com. You can click on it, link to it, read it, save it, print it out until they take this article down. We live in a dictatorship. Democracy no longer exists. Congressmen sway their ass like pimps and prostitutes along the Potomac River for a few bucks. They are the fellatio slaves to the corporations on their knees doing anything and anyone to get into office. I say that metaphorically, but how much do you think they really care about you? I mean, look at the Supreme Court nominee. It's all staged. He's being asked all the softball questions. He's not really being forced to answer how he feels about the importance of the U.S. Constitution. Some of you who have been listening on NPR radio noticed that he's avoiding a lot of questions, especially questions about how he would relate to the president if the president decided to push us into a dictatorship. Now, they didn't ask those questions so bluntly, as I am stating, as I usually state every week, so bluntly and arrogantly, but it's just to inform you that this is what they believe in. They believe that servitude to the empire is really what makes this country great. And while he is guilty by association with his relationship to the terrorist that is in the White House, known as George W. Bush, he is not fit to be the Supreme Court nominee, not meant to be the Supreme Court judge when he does not accurately, when he doesn't feel comfortable talking about the Constitution, how important it is. He didn't do that. He was very hesitant in relation to the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment that states, as we said before, that all persons should be secure in their persons and their places, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you know, even in London, we've said that London is a very perfect example of a test case scenario of the coming police state control grid with cameras everywhere, cameras talking to each other, the future, the 1984, Brave New World, all that, that's all happening in England. And once it gets caught on, you know, people start getting used to living in that kind of society, and we start accepting that kind of society here, we're going beyond the point of no return. Article number 6, just looking at Europe is really disturbing, like I said. Now you can be arrested for any offense whatsoever. And now the police are being given sweeping powers to arrest people for every offense, including dropping litter, failure to wear a seatbelt, and other minor misdemeanors. The measures which come into force on January 1st, well, that's already here, are the biggest expansion in decades of police power to deprive people of their liberty. At present, officers can generally arrest people if they suspect them of committing an offense, which carries at least 5 years in prison. They will now have the discretion to detain someone if they suspect any offense that they think an arrest is necessary. That's all they have to do is think an arrest is necessary. And here at home in Portland, Oregon, all a police officer has to do is say that they are afraid it's a moving vehicle, so that they therefore have to kill somebody. And again, over the break, sadly, another cop killer is on the loose. Another person tried to get away from the police, did not want to stop by the police. The chief of the police, Derek Foxworthy, authorized on August 1st of this year that a moving vehicle is not necessarily a threat that justifies the member's use of deadly physical force. But we are happening to be seeing this happening all over the country, and it's pretty disgusting. We're going to get to your phone calls at this time of the program. I'll try to get to as many as I can. Next week, I'll let you know in advance now. Jack McGlam is going to be on the program. Jack McGlam is part of an organization known as Police Officers Against the New World Order. He will be calling in from the South, or I believe he's in Georgia right now, while his wife is undergoing cancer treatment. He normally resides in Idaho, and he is a friend of a friend, so I am happy to have him on. Another friend of mine, Anthony J. Hilder, who I mentioned earlier, produced a great film called Illuminati. Some of you have seen it. I've aired the program here. Well, you can also view the parallels between the Bush cartel and the Nazi regime on PrismPlanet.com. If you go to PrismPlanet.com, you can watch Illuminati stream. It's a free play. And see how close we are returning to the National Socialist Party that the Nazis envisioned yet failed to implement till they migrated to the United States of America. Now, there is a, I don't want to say it's a success because it's not, but Gordon Smith's people have walked through the door of Portland Cable Access and several other cable access centers in the greater Northwest between the Portland area and the Salem area, and they came around and looked at the facility because a lot of them did not know what cable access was. So that could be a good thing, but Gordon Smith himself was not able to make it, so that's where that stands. But in the meantime, I have been informed of something that you may be interested in. I don't have the location, I don't have the time, but tomorrow there is a secret meeting that the public is not allowed to participate in going to or discussing or recording, and that is continuing this dialogue on whether to keep or eliminate cable access and programs like this. There's going to be a meeting between OPB, the Oregon Public Affairs Network, also known as OPAN, and the Oregon Legislative Media. This is a secret meeting. No public is allowed to be a part of that. So as soon as I find out more information about that, I will let you know. In the meantime, when this program is over at 8 o'clock, you can go ahead and turn to channel 23. On channel 23, the IPO is on right now, and they will be discussing this very thing. They're also discussing Martin Luther King. On the topic of the fact that it is Martin Luther King Day on Monday, I urge everyone to remember that Martin Luther King would be considered an enemy combatant and a domestic terrorist in the United States of America in 2006. This is reality. Same thing with Rosa Parks, sadly, who passed on recently. The people that stood for the Constitution would be considered super patriots and enemies of the state. That is a new reality we find ourselves in. In one of my classes, I'm taking a history of the world for the last 250 years and examining different revolutions throughout history, the American Revolution, the French Revolution, et cetera, and so on and so on. And I started to take a look at what worked for these people in changing their environment, resistance to tyranny, resistance to the monarch system, the church system, the suppressive system that exists in Europe over the last couple hundred years. And I kept running into the same things that revolutionaries or people that want change now here in America are facing. They seem to have faced a similar problem, why the French Revolution was not successful and why the American Revolution apparently at this point was not successful, because we are now returning to the monarch system, to dictatorship here in the U.S. of A. It wasn't intended to be that way in the beginning. The Founding Fathers weren't perfect people. They did own slaves. The bypass law and the Constitution, the fine print, whatever you want to call it, was that the only people that had all these rights had to be white men who owned land. Now, I still respect the Founding Fathers despite that. I think the Constitution is a valuable document. We use it as a cornerstone here at Outside the Box to show what is no longer being obeyed in the United States of America, both the Congress and the President. I'll say that again. Both the Congress and the President, both the left, both the right, both the Democrat, both the Republican, both of them, many, many powerful, we're talking about upper leadership within the Congress, does not respect the Constitution. And in this day and age, we'll get to your phone calls in just a sec, in this day and age, that kind of respect and appreciation for the Constitution is no longer there. So while the fact that knowing we came over here as foreigners, as Europeans, and took the Native Americans' land, we still should look at the Constitution and realize that it is the sole document we had to stand on. Why I can do my show right now and why a lot of you can wear the t-shirts you wear and listen to the music that you listen to, you must realize there's still many books and records and CDs and albums in other parts of the country that are banned, including Pink Floyd of all things. So appreciate what you have and fight for what you have. Because unless you stand up right now and assume responsibility for your own liberty, for your own freedom, you will lose it. If you want to trade off your liberty for so-called security, you deserve neither liberty nor security. Benjamin Franklin said that, and I believe that is one of his best quotes. With that, we will go to the first phone call of the evening. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
My name's Peter.
Go ahead, Peter.
I'm calling in about the officer shooting that happened in Southeast Portland recently.
What day was that? Which one?
The one that happened near Rose City Golf Course.
Okay. The one I'm looking at here was 64th and Alameda Street.
That could be it.
Okay.
Who knows? There's so many of them.
Yeah.
Anyway, there, I believe in the Portland Mercury, there was a response about how the officer involved in the shooting was related to the person that had the house. And I was curious just how that comes apart in Portland, where someone gets called who's an officer of the law, and their sister, who I believe is the woman whose house this happened in, does she have the right to call someone and, even though it's an officer of the law, have them come and protect her personally?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of corruption going on and a lot of miscommunication. But thank you for your call. What I do want to say before we go to the next call is I've actually really been wanting to say this for a while. I'll just say it. I'm not an anarchist. I'm not someone that believes that all police should be abolished. That would be a nice vision to have no prisons, no jails, no police down the line if we collectively want to become a more peaceful society. Unfortunately, not everyone shares my point of view. And the reality of the matter is there are people in our community that will take advantage of you, that will rape you, that will kill you, that will mug you, that will hurt you. The sad thing about it is those are the people the police need to have an eye on, the type of people that prey on those that aren't looking. I don't need a police officer to give me any protection. I can watch my own house. Yet, you know, it's really sick and sad how many people in a economically deprived society and city will stoop to the level of going to someone's house and stealing their shoes. About a few weeks ago, somebody came up to my house and broke into the shed, stole my computer, stole some magazines, and stole my work shoes. And they can go ahead and do that and try and get whatever kind of bag of tweak that they can get with that. But that's really, really sad that we live in that society. That old catchphrase that says, you have to lock everything down. You know what I'm talking about. You have to be afraid. If it's not bolted down, it will be taken. Unfortunately, that is true. Unfortunately, that is true. And I am not against the police. And if you're a police officer watching this, if you're a good one, then I support you. Okay. But the bottom line is the police in this country, the military in this country, initial purposes for having those was to manage the slave population during the Industrial Revolution. During the technological revolution, to maintain the slaves, keep them on the plantation, to get rid of the Indians, to break up unions, to stop college protests. I mean, that is a cornerstone that became a cornerstone for building up the police state in America, along with the phony drug war, while the CIA brings in cocaine and heroin. All that has been documented to happen in the 80s. Mena, Arkansas, and other places like that, they have their priorities wrong. So they can cry, and they can cry, and they can cry every single week in the Portland Tribune about they need more jails, they need more prisons. They don't need to do that till they get their priorities straight, till they realize there are certain people in this world that may need to be in jail, and there are certain people that shouldn't be watched or bothered, in fact, should be supported. And those are people that are fighting for the Constitution. But in reality, the police are surveilling them. They are going to their protests. They are taking the cameras. They are filming everyone, and they are matching their faces against an iris scan machine and entering information that they can about these groups into giant databases. And I will not support the police as long as they continue to do that. Second thing, I'll get to your calls in just a sec. Two calls, okay. We're seeing more tasering of 8-year-old children, 7-year-old children. The fact of the matter is, if a police officer, like the old days, does not have enough basic muscular strength to restrain a 7-year-old or 8-year-old without choking them to death, they should not be a police officer. They should be behind a desk. If I was to be mayor or something like that, I would make sure that they had enough training to where a police officer would be able to nonviolently restrain an 8-year-old. As of right now, they cannot restrain 8-year-olds or 9-year-olds or 79-year-old women without tasering them or putting a bullet in them. More likely tasering, because tasering is the next big wave. And with that, we'll go to the next couple phone calls really quickly. Go ahead. You can bring in either phone call up if the phones are working. tonight. Go ahead. Okay, go to the next call. And there's a few other announcements that I want to make before we end the show tonight. I guess the last person was on, but they didn't want to say anything. I've actually been getting some phone calls lately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, check it out. I've seen that commercial you're talking about with the RFID, with IBM. The guy's driving the truck down the road, and they're like, somebody stops him and says, you're going the wrong direction. They're like, well, how do you know we're going? Oh, the boxes are telling us. Because they're all labeled. Everything's labeled.
Yeah.
With the ID.
Right.
All the tracking, and there's just, you know, everything just out of control.
Are you referring to the most current OnStar commercial on the radio?
No, I'm talking about IBM selling their product to people that are going to ship packages.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
As far as the OnStar commercial I was just referring to, there's a commercial out right now where this woman's crying. She's crying for help. And the commercial goes on for about 45 seconds, and then she reaches the dispatcher. Well, it's OnStar. We're here to help. Don't worry. We know where you are. We're coming to help. And she's like, really? Oh, yeah. You hear the ambulance sound effects in the background because they're here to help her because they know where she is. You see, technology is not necessarily a bad thing. It could be a good thing. I mean, we have gigabytes that you can literally wear around your neck. They're called flash drives. You can hold 512 or 1 gig. I use them for some of my research and documents. In fact, I'm looking to buy a hard drive right now for my computer. So it's not that it's a bad thing. It's why you're using the technology. Are you using it to escape yourself? Are you using the technology to control others? These are the type of things that we're dealing with. Now, earlier when I was talking about the revolutionary era, remember one thing. What they did failed because they decided that whatever group reached power, overthrew the powerful government before that, okay, they decided to start doing the exact same things and enslaving the population that put them into power. We saw it in Afghanistan. We saw it in France. We saw it. Okay, you can go to the next call if they can keep it. You have to go pretty quickly. But we're going to do another show about the American Revolution, French Revolution, and Afghan Revolution. Go ahead.
Hey, Alex. How's it going?
Hey.
Yeah, I just want to say this is my favorite show on the air here, and I can't get enough of it. And I just wanted to tell everybody there's a quote that I heard. The sound of freedom is something you never hear until it's gone. So just remember that.
Thank you.
And have a good night.
Yeah. Well, usually I'm pumped up and I'm screaming and yelling and trying to prove how much I know usually on the show. And frankly, I'm quite tired of that. This show is not about me. It's not about Alex Ansari. I will let you know what my blog is, though, because I link to a lot of very important news outlets. AlexAnsari.blogspot.com. And on Saturday and Sunday evenings at 8 p.m., Alex Ansari, myself, the program, a radio program I do as well, streams online at omnisoundradio1.net. And you can go to that and listen on a 64K bitrate. So it's high quality. And on my website, I have some radio programs that I did that you haven't heard or seen because they were done somewhere else. So those things are on alexansary.blogspot.com. It's 2006. This year belongs to us. But unless you fight for your freedom, you absolutely are going to lose your freedom. And fortunately, it looks like we are already in the New World Order. Unless you do something now, you've already lost. Until next week with Jack McClam, I am Alex Ansari, reminding you there still is a war for your mind. See you next week. Good night.